Chapter 1. Grace. Grace is God's best idea. His decision to ravage a people by love, to rescue passionately, and to restore justly. What rivals it? Of all his wondrous works, grace, in my estimation, is the magnum opus. By Max Lucado. A great place to begin when you think about an upward climb to faith is God's amazing gift of grace. Grace is a word that you hear bantered around, but what does it really mean? Simply defined, grace is God's unmerited favor. Grace is his goodness towards those who have no claim on nor reason to expect divine favor. Let me tell you, that would be you and me. The principal manifestation of God's grace has been in the form of a gift. Salvation is not our achievement, but it is a gift from God. He created each of us with a purpose in mind. Here's the unbelievable part. The God of the universe wants to have a relationship with us. God has been very patient with me because it took me over 40 years to learn this lesson. Growing up, my faithful mother took me to a local Presbyterian church every Sunday. She was a woman who spent every night on her knees before she went to bed, a lesson I never quite learned. I grew up spending time in church, believed in God, but never quite understood. God wanted to have a relationship with me. When I was in college, I figured I could do everything on my own. I stopped going to church and believed it was all up to me. My transition into college was smooth, and I was successful living on my own. Therefore, I thought, I did not need God anymore. I accomplished quite a bit and thought I had done everything all on my own. Moreover, I worked hard and partied hard, too. I married my college sweetheart, who had also been raised in the church, but also did not have a relationship with God. He joined the Air Force and flew fighter jets. He flew in the Vietnam War with 167 missions over enemy territory. After he returned, we continued living just for today, partied hard, and tried not to think about tomorrow. Every weekend, we drank our share of alcohol and had a great time being young and carefree. After being married for 12 years, we realized we were living a self-centered lifestyle with too much partying and drinking booze. One year, we got stationed in Germany. Neither of us had a relationship with the Lord. The word to describe my relationship with God was indifferent. We were not doing evil deeds, but sinful deeds that pushed us far away from God. We wanted children badly at this time in our lives. Unfortunately, we tried to have children on our own and were unsuccessful. We even tried artificial insemination, but that did not work either. We also attempted to adopt a child before we moved to Germany, but had to leave suddenly before our name came up on the list. In Germany, we started again the adoption process to adopt a child born to a U.S. servicewoman living overseas. Once again, we became discouraged because the process was painfully slow. Even though we were not paying attention to God, He had a different plan for us on how we would become parents, but somehow he had to get our attention. Looking back over my life experience, I've learned that I can be very impatient and stubborn. At times these qualities have served me well in dealing with humans, but not with God. As a driven, goal-seeking person, I used to be more focused on my results than people. My agenda was always to get what I wanted. I was a control freak. In my 30s, things were pretty much going as I expected, and I felt no need for God. I had broken my leg badly and managed to go through a lot of grueling physical therapy because a kind army doctor told me I would never run again. I stubbornly began to run. The more I thought about what he said, the more determined I became to prove him wrong. Today, I'm eternally grateful to that doctor because 40 years later, I am still running. Now is a good time to mention a time when life took over and my husband and I realized that we had no control over circumstances that shift our lives. One day, we got an unexpected phone call from the Air Force. The voice on the phone told us that Dick's best friend, Mike, had been killed. Mike was involved in a routine training accident when his plane flew into a mountain at another airbase in Germany, about 100 miles from us. We immediately traveled to see his wife Cindy and her young daughters. The girls were only 4 and 7 years old at that time. Since we were all living far from home and overseas, the Air Force asked Dick to accompany the family back to the States. We decided that I would fly back with them too. In the following weeks, our hearts and minds stayed focused on Cindy. Just imagine how difficult it was to be living so far from your family and having your spouse killed. Even writing this over 40 years later, I get teary-eyed thinking about the day we got that phone call. I remember it so vividly. It is odd how when painful things happen in your life, you remember exactly where you were and what you were doing at the time. I remember that I was swimming in an indoor pool in our small town in Zweibrücken, Germany. The lifeguard signaled me to come to the side and said I had a phone call. It was my husband calling to tell me to come home immediately so we could go see Cindy. Cindy had so many decisions to make so quickly. Where would she go? Where would she bury Mike? Where would she and the girls live? Finally, after a week or so, we flew to Tulsa with Cindy and her girls, where Mike's parents lived, and Mike was buried there. After spending 3 weeks with them, we returned to Germany to finish Dick's tour of duty. While we were with Cindy, we were touched and amazed by her faith at every turn. Watching her, we realized we were missing something crucial in our lives. Upon our return to Germany, we started going to church again. That was something we had never done as a couple. A month later, late in October of 1977, the Lord blessed us with a good phone call. This good phone call was from the adoption agency, saying they had a little girl for us. We were so happy to have a new baby girl. Also, we decided to give her the middle name Michelle, which is after Mike, our friend who was killed in the training accident. She was and still is our only child. Of course, we were incredibly grateful and gave the credit to the Lord, but something crucial was still missing from our lives. Then we moved from Germany to Louisiana, and we decided to join a local Methodist church. The problem was that I was just sort of going through the church motions. I was back to being like that same kid who just spent time in church, not really getting any kind of a connection. I went to church, but I did not have a relationship with Christ. Life was better, but again, something seemed to be missing. I wish I could say that I got the whole relationship thing correct right away, but that was not the case. I am so thankful that God kept pursuing me. To be honest, God had to pursue me for another 11 years. I was just that stubborn. Once again, Jesus interrupted my life in a powerful way. I was on an early morning hike up a mountain with a good friend of mine. This mountain is called Mount Drubido and is in Riverside, California. The cover of this book shows what it looks like to climb this mountain. In December 1988, my friend and I saw a magnificent sunrise. Out of nowhere, my friend asked about my goals for the year. I went over them, and she asked, "So when are you going to give up control and give your life to Christ?" Whew! Talk about a conversation stopper. She left me freezing to ponder that, and I spent a couple of hours at the top of that mountain arguing with God. We had climbed up a back way in the dark, and by the time I was ready to leave, it was daylight. I had difficulty finding a path to go down. It took me quite a while. I felt like Jacob wrestling with God. Read the entire story in the book of Genesis. With nothing still resolved, I called my pastor, Bill Johnson, and he spent a good part of the day with me. After many cups of coffee at a local coffee shop, he asked if I would like to go to church and pray. I was reticent to give up my control, but in that prayer, I finally did. Then I felt an unexplainable joy. That joy still resides in me today. Now, rather than looking at people as an interruption and going my own way, I love being with people. I love to share the joy that I still have. I love to give others an encouraging word. None of that feels like a duty, but now it brings me great fulfillment. That, my friend, is God's grace. He pursued me even when I did not think I had a use for him. Undeserving as I was, he pursued me for many years. What a patient, forgiving, loving God he is, filled with grace. This grace is available to all who seek it. No matter where you are or what you have done, all you have to do is seek him, acknowledge him, and ask for forgiveness. Think of the final scene as Jesus hangs on the cross. What does Jesus do? In his last act as a man, he forgives. In a last-ditch effort, the criminal, hanging next to Jesus, said to Jesus, "Remember me when you come into your kingdom." What does Jesus do? He says, "Truly, I tell you that today you will be with me in paradise." That can be found in Luke 23, verses 42 to 43. That is an amazing example of grace. The song, Amazing Grace, is one of the most well-known songs ever. The author, John Newton, was a vulgar sea captain engaging in the Atlantic slave trade in the 1700s. He was constantly bad-mouthing Christians. On a voyage, he had a near-death experience when the ship he was on encountered a violent storm, prompting him to cry out to the Lord. His ship and crew were saved from disaster. Years later, he left the sea and slave trafficking and started speaking out against slavery. Then, as an Anglican priest, he penned these lines as a poem. "Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I am found. I was blind, but now I see." Just like me, it took John Newton several years to get it. But God never gave up. The amazing part of this story is not his conversion, but that God kept pursuing him. This, my friends, is grace. In his famous ode, The Hound of Heaven, Francis Thompson centers on the relentless pursuit of a sinner by a loving God. This poem is written in a style that's difficult to understand, but I love the visual image of a bloodhound relentlessly going after its mark and not giving up until it has found it. That is our God. He relentlessly pursued me even when I thought I had no use for him, and he is relentlessly pursuing you. When will you submit to him and confess him as your Savior? Trust me, it's not as scary as you might think. I was at a retreat in the fall of 2019, and a song really impacted me. The name of the song is The Goodness of God by Bethel Music. The song tells of how faithful God has been. The chorus struck me as so true for my own life. Even when I was far from God, he was still faithful and pursuing me. The chorus says, "'Cause all my life you have been faithful, and all my life you have been so, so good." It sings of all the ways God has been faithful, and the bridge is about God pursuing you and me, running after us. God does not just pursue us, he chases us. As we have been given this fabulous gift of grace by the Creator of the universe, should we do any less than to give grace to others? That is so much easier said than done. It's a constant struggle to give others the same treatment that we would like to be given when we mess up. It is so much easier to be critical of others than to see our own faults. Grace, however, is a two-way street. As we have been shown grace by our Creator, we must constantly strive to give grace to others. This can be summed up in the words of Jesus when asked what the greatest commandment was. Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself." Matthew 22:37-38.